The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. So much to talk about. I'm going to give a quick introduction. And this show is all about how one act or one interview or one show begets another. And it just keeps getting more and more interesting as we go deeper down the rabbit hole, I suppose. But with light, green light at the end of the tunnel, I think we're really making progress here. I'm talking about some of the aftermath of my appearance a week ago yesterday on Sean Hannity's show, Sean Inanity, or sometimes Sean Insanity is what I call him and his cronies, particularly his sidekick Chris Horner, who they trot out every time they have me on the program. Chris Horner is the author of three books. The first one several years ago was The Politically Incorrect Guide to Environmentalism and Global Warming. Then came Red Hot Lies, and the last one is Power Grab. So you can see where he's coming from, and if you'd like to see the clip, it's on my website at www.thegreenfront.com. You have to see it to believe it. So that interview took place at after that, because I had interviewed on that program the man that I mentioned in the Hannity clip, and who had had a climate conversion. That's D.R. Tucker. D.R. is a new friend of mine, I'm happy to say. He has a very interesting story, as you heard. If you didn't, again, you can check the archives at thegreenfront.com and hear that. In conversations with him this week, I learned that he is also in regular communication with a couple named Roger and Susan Schemel, if I pronounce her last name correctly, and they are the co-founders of something called GWEN. That group is that name is an acronym for a group called the Global Warming Education Network. Not only have they had a conversion about their stance on climate change because of the facts, the scientific facts, but they've also, I understand, had a conversion from Republican to Democrat, or at least independent. Going to find out more from Roger and Susan in just a minute. I also want to tell you what's coming up in the second half of this show, in the second half of the hour. I'll be speaking with one of my young heroes, and I've never had the pleasure to meet or interview him, but I certainly have been monitoring his progress and seen him on video. His name is Alec Lors, and he is, I believe, the youngest climate presenter in Al Gore's Climate Project, TCP as we call it for short. He's been active as a climate activist since he was 12. I called to request an interview with him because he is organizing a very important event this Sunday, Mother's Day appropriately. It's called the I Matter March, and it's talking to his generation, speaking to them about, they're speaking to us. His generation is saying, we matter, the next generation matters, we're mad as heck, I imagine they're saying, and we want you to do a lot more about climate change. So we're going to find out how you can participate in that march. We'll find out more about his story. He didn't have to convert. He just, at 12, decided this is the cause of his generation and his life. So fascinating fellow, and I'm sure you'll agree after you hear the interview with him. But first, let me, without further delay, welcome Roger and Susan to the Green Front.
Hey, Betsy. How are you?
So glad to have you. Susan, you there too?
Yep, I'm here, and I'm honored not only to be on with you, but also Alec Lords, who's one of our heroes now too.
Well, you know, if you listen to The Green Front, you'll hear people who are in the forefront of the movement, and I'm going to put you right up there because you, along with D.R. Tucker, are powerful, powerful advocates for the need to do nothing more than just steep yourself in the science, to actually do some reading on this and not just repeat the sound bites you hear, not just to drink the Kool-Aid that those who would have us do nothing about climate change, you know, would like us to do, you know, stay stupid, I guess. So I can't wait to hear your story, and let's just jump in. Tell us, take us back a few years when you thought that, you know, climate change was just a plot by tree huggers, we environmentalists, to, make more money for ourselves. I think that's what they said, through, you know, creating a problem where there was none so we could get more grant funds. Yeah, that's exactly how all the people, you know, I know are operating, out of greed, not.
Great. I'll start in. We and then Susan will jump in, I'm sure, along the way. But we weren't so bad as to think the climate issue was a plot to get money. We were more neutral, I would say, because we thought it was a controversy And this goes back to, just by way of background, I have a master's degree in chemistry and an MBA in marketing and finance from Harvard. So I worked at a large consulting firm back in the 70s and actually became a project manager for a big study we did for the EPA on the fluorocarbons causing a hole in the ozone layer. And as a result of that, and seeing that our government jumped in and worked with other countries to develop the Montreal Protocol to regulate fluorocarbons, I was basically left with the impression in the 70s that, well, thank God the government comes in and takes care of things when we have big problems like this. So I would later read articles about climate change, and I'd think to myself, well, there is a controversy going on. There seems to be a back and forth, and I felt that when the time came and it was clear, that our government would again act with others to do the right thing. So that went on for quite a while until one of our daughters convinced us that we had to go see this new movie that was out in 2006 called An Inconvenient Truth.
Exactly 5 years ago.
Yep, and we went, and that was the first time that I was forced to actually think about climate change for more than the few minutes it would take me to scan an article. And again, being a chemist and understanding atmospheric chemistry from the work we did on the ozone hole, and listening to Al Gore go through the various slides that he had accumulated, I came out saying, oh my God, this is a problem. Why the heck aren't we doing more about it? And that led to doing more research on my own, because as a consultant, having left the other consulting firm and starting my own small consulting firm in 1981, I was used to checking facts and getting more information so that I wouldn't rely on one source, even though Al Gore had collected information from many sources. So I started reading and collecting information from the likes of Jim Hansen of NASA and Ross Gelbspan, who lives in Massachusetts, who worked for the Globe and wrote one of the early books.
Boiling Point,
that's right. We ended up going to have breakfast with Ross at one point, by the way, and it's wonderful that he's still working on this more than 20 years later.
I don't know. I tried to get him on the show about a year ago, and he said he was so burnt out he had to retire from it, but maybe he's back in it. I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so. But anyway, to just kind of jump forward, we went to Europe that...
Well, don't forget to say that we also, our daughter encouraged us to come up and meet Bill McKibben, so we did the last leg of his walk from... in New Hampshire, in Vermont, 5-day walk, and ended up walking with 1,000 people in Burlington. So that allowed us to meet Bill McKibben and some other people in the climate movement, which further invigorated us.
That's right. And then we went to Europe in that fall of 06, and we saw all the wind turbines in Scandinavia, and we came back to the United States and landed in Boston, not seeing a turbine or a solar panel anywhere, and we thought, what the heck is wrong with the United States? This is a serious problem. You know, we're proud to be Americans, and we don't want to see our country behind the rest of the world. So we said, well, we'll start a nonprofit. We'll get the word out to people, and soon everything will be fine. Why were we naive?
Well, I have a similar story. Go ahead, though.
Yeah, so... We've done a lot with Gwen. We did all the original things that Bill McKibben organized under what was originally called the Step It Up program. We had our Senator John Kerry come to an event at the Old North Fringe in Concord during a hurricane, and he was heading down to one of the climate talks, and he said, I'll never forget Concord in this strong weather. And that was the first of about a dozen things we've organized, including polar plunges into Walden Pond, a rally in front of the White House that we did with other groups on 10-10-10, and we've done a million things. We've written letters to congressmen, we've written letters to major corporations suggesting that they change to energy efficient lighting and use more insulation. And we're still going, but I can tell you, I can understand Ross Gelbspan. We've only been at it about 6 years, and it can get discouraging after a while.
You think?
Well, I skipped over the part about the conversion to republicanism, so maybe...
From republicanism, please.
That was
from.
A flip.
So maybe I should back up to that. I grew up in a Republican family in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and I think with a lot of kids, and at least for myself, I never gave a lot of thought to which party I was going to join when I became old enough to vote. I figured my parents made a good decision, and the Republicans to me represented, you know, not having too big a government interfering with things and doing the right thing for the country. And so I basically followed in the easy path and voted Republican through probably, I can't actually remember whether I voted for George Bush.
Yes, you did, dear.
Okay.
We canceled each other out on that one. I think probably the first time Roger voted for a Democrat was in 2006 when, for the governorship of Massachusetts, we had Governor Patrick running, and he was going to put us back in the regional greenhouse gas initiative, which Romney, a Republican, had taken us out of. And I think that's at that point, you did indeed vote for the Democrat because you realized this was the direction we needed to go.
Yeah, thank you, dear. And I guess, as with the climate, the climate can have tipping points, or the climate scientists call them forcings, that force the climate into a different steady state. And the forcing for me was going to see Inconvenient Truth, doing more research, and then realizing that the Republican Party was no longer doing the right thing by either calling climate change a hoax in the voice of Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
and voting more or less as a block to stop the government from doing its job. And I've become more and more concerned about the Republican Party in recent years as I've watched what they've done to try and disempower the EPA, and we're following other aspects of the government that we never did before when we were busy raising a family and running a company and thinking everything was okay.
You must love the Tea Partiers then.
Oh,
not
yeah.
One of whom believes in climate change.
No, we can't believe that people don't believe in climate change, and we've come to the point where we're really trying to focus more and more attention to the extent we have any influence on President Obama, because as one of my brothers said to me at one point, where I keep talking about climate change, and he said, Roger, if this is such a big deal, how come you're the only one I hear talking about it? We've come to realize that a lot of people are confused about things because of the money put into the PR efforts by the fossil fuel industry to keep people confused. And in a time of confusion and misunderstanding, we think it falls to the overall leader to, you know, with what he knows, which we think is quite a bit, given mm-hmm. the fact he's got Harvard's John Holdren as a science advisor and Secretary of Energy Chu, a Nobel Prize winner. Obama should be, in our view, stepping up to the plate, getting a nationally publicized a TV program on prime time with replays until people get it. Basically,
I'll
tell
host that.
Americans,
I'll volunteer.
Hey, this is a real problem, folks. We need to deal with it. We can solve it if we all work together and call out the Republican lies, basically. It's time for him to show real leadership, in our opinion.
Well, Roger and Susan, I'm planning to start a green tea party for those of us who are steamed that we seem to be playing politics with the planet. I think that should be part of our platform. Just rerun that show until everybody signs on the dotted line that they get it.
Exactly.
Sounds good to us.
It'd be funny if it wasn't so serious. And by the way, the comment about if it was so important, how come others are not talking about this, that really resonated and rang a bell and triggered a memory. When I was starting just Green Minutes on KCBS Radio, my background being in radio news mm-hmm. in San Francisco, 13 years ago, Earth Day 1997, called Trash Talk, and went from garbage to global warming over the years. My news director, every time I go in and say, can I be on more than, you know, 3 minutes a week? I've got so much to talk about, so much waste, and mm-hmm. so little, so few people, you know, so little being done about it. and so few people really understanding and connecting the dots. Every year I'd go in and he'd say, Betsy, if it was such an important issue, how come nobody else, no other radio or television stations are making, you know, this a regular beat? And over the years I'd have to look around and say, I just said, Ed, they just don't have me. And for the entire 10 years that I did that Green Minute on KCBS, yes, occasionally you'd see reporters doing stories, but nothing as a regularly occurring feature. Meantime, we had, you know, sports features, money features, mm-hmm. celebrity features, and I was, you know, lone voice in the wilderness. And same thing on Air America when I was doing EcoTalk. Kept fighting the program directors who said, if it's such an important thing, how come nobody else is covering it? And guess what? There's not one green talk show on anywhere on America's mainstream airwaves, radio or television.
Well,
okay, my rant is over. Let's hear from Susan a little bit.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, I guess going back to Republicanism, I also grew up in a Republican household in Ohio, and, you know, very, very much about fiscal responsibility and independence and self-reliance. And, of course, I wasn't paying much attention to politics, and I didn't realize how much the party had changed. It certainly is not the Republican Party of 1970 when President Nixon signed the EPA and Clean Air Act into law. But I was just too busy raising a family and working to really pay attention to what was going on. I've always had a very strong affinity to nature and have spent a lot of time outside hiking, and nature is very important to me. So this part of me is really coming out now. By profession, I'm a physical therapist, which might sound unrelated, but I understand science very well. I'm realizing I have a much, much better science background than any politician or most of the media. I also understand interactions between systems, and I understand prevention. And I think all those things have come in to make me really understand how critical this issue is. So Roger and I kind of are feeding off of each other at this point, going to a lot of lectures at Harvard and MIT. In fact, after this, we're going to go to lecture at Harvard and reading and studying up on this. I'll talk a little bit about paint brown green. After the special election in Massachusetts last year, when we elected Republican Scott Brown to take over for Ted Kennedy, a lot of us environmentalists in Massachusetts were quite alarmed. So I formed this group, Paint Brown Green, and we came together to discuss what we were going to do about it, and it included members of the faith community, the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, which is a lot of the towns around here have climate groups, and then they're held loosely together by this Massachusetts Climate Action Network. So people from there came, and we sat around and talked about what we were going to do about Brown. And basically, it seemed like, yes, he had voted pro-environment when in Massachusetts. He had voted for REGI, the Greenhouse Gas Initiative. And he had also at least not voted against the Global Warming Solutions Act, which is a very strong environmental act that Massachusetts passed 2 years ago, which calls for a greenhouse gas reduction of 25% by 2025. That vote was a voice vote, so we can't absolutely say that Brown voted for it, but we also can definitely say that he didn't vote against it. So we felt that, okay, he did vote pro-environment in Massachusetts, and all we have to do is remind him that we in Massachusetts are very pro-environment and that he has to do this nationally. And I am, looking back, I'm astounded that I was that naive even 16, 17 months ago. Because Massachusetts, the groups in Massachusetts have really called out to Brown, and I'm talking thousands of people in with letters, and we've had rallies, and we've had emails, and we've had visits, and it's groups like the Sierra Club and Oceana and MCAN, which represents many, many members, Environment Massachusetts, the faith groups, Interfaith Power and Light, you know, Friends of the Earth. So many people have come together calling on Brown to vote pro-environment, support the EPA, support the Clean Air Act. And despite all of this, Roger and I personally have had three meetings, two in his Boston office, not with him. He has not, by the way, met with any environmentalist except for 1 minute with Environment Massachusetts. He will sit down on a heartbeat with somebody from the gas, oil, coal industry, but he has not met with any of us. But Roger and I did have two meetings in the Boston office with a senior aide, and we just had an hour-long meeting in D.C. with two of his aides, including his environmental and energy aide. And despite all of this, all these calls, he has not changed his mantra at all. And basically he's supporting coal and big oil, and he sends this letter out that has major mistakes in it, like saying that the EPA is unregulated. And he's not listening. He's not looking at the research.
You are
against
the
Clean Air Act,
despite
the fact that he has two daughters with asthma.
Wow. And you are. It's so great to have historical perspective, you know, and to catch people and say, you know, I've been covering this beat long enough to, you know, remember certain things that people would rather not have remembered.
Right. Exactly.
The power there.
It's interesting, yeah, too, if I could say one more thing about Brown.
Please.
His chief environment and energy aide is a policy person. That's what his degree is in. And we stopped in Markey's office, and Markey has 6 PhD scientists on his staff. And that just says, you know, here Brown is being advised by people with no science background at all. And I'm just so disillusioned with the government.
Yeah,
you have a lot of
following
company,
the whole Citizens United issue bothers us immensely, the influence of people like the Koch brothers and Rupert Murdoch. And here I am, a Harvard MBA. I shouldn't be speaking this way in theory, but I am really concerned that the big businesses in this country have applied some strategic thinking skills to how they can work with the government and with money to buy influence to maximize their short-term profits at the expense of the long-term, because they simply don't understand the long-term, and everything that they're about is set up to optimize the short-term. And we as humans have not basically evolved either in the way we think or in the way our systems have been developed, call it whether it's democracy or marketing or finance or our government or our legal systems, have not developed over the centuries to deal with a problem such as climate change, which is very stealthy, slow developing, few signs of a problem at any given day, and very easily susceptible to confusion. So we're very seriously concerned that our government isn't working. Jim Hansen has said democracy isn't working to deal with this problem. And we don't say that as being, you know, anything against America or our systems. We grew up in Ohio and we love this country, but we need to react to this problem much more aggressively than we are. And that's why we think that the leadership issue falls back to the guy on top that we elected to do this. President Obama needs to get out there in front and wake people up, and I simply refuse to believe that the President of the United States does not have the power to basically get the truth out to people when it's supported by some 97% of the best scientists in the world.
Couldn't agree more. And the only thing I disagree with in that last comment is that you say you shouldn't be speaking out. I think you absolutely should be speaking out. Very powerful spokespeople, both of you, as is D.R. Tucker. And maybe I should start a climate convert corner. And on each edition of the Green Front, interview one or two of you, because you really are exactly the kind of voice and stories and individuals that need to get out there. So I'm going to do my part.
Thank you.
I'm flipping through my favorite climate blog, Climate Progress by Joseph Roman.
Oh, we're addicted to that. We read that every night. Yes. That's our date every night to read that.
And then you have sweet green dreams, right? Well,
among the many
great stories that we could talk about, for one, small car sales finally going up because gas prices in my area are about $4.50. Among the things I've done over the last 13 years is start a grassroots campaign called Don't Be Fueled, Mothers for Clean and Safe Vehicles, Hybrids, Not Hummers. We did that in the wake of 9/11. And it looks now that what we could not do with our little mom's campaign from Marin County, prices at the pump have done. Let's not forget also what's happening in terms of the devastation taking place in the South, and not only the fires and drought continuing in Texas by a governor who doesn't believe in climate change but is begging for emergency dollars from President Obama.
Well, that's where I feel that our president could connect the dots, and he did several years ago, I think in 2008, with the Red River floods. You know, he connected the dots, and I guess, you know, the deniers said you can't definitely say that's global warming. You stop talking about it. But we definitely need to say that the likelihood that these events would have occurred without the without the influence of man-made global warming is extremely slim. Every element of the weather is being impacted now.
And it's being, the impacts are being amplified. The,
right,
the ferocity
exactly.
and velocity is greater because of it. And while we cannot prove it, if you look at the patterns, and every day there's examples somewhere in the world and
right.
lately on our own soil, it's exactly what climate scientists had predicted. And we have, I stopped counting, but it must be around 400 deaths just from the tornadoes in the six states in the south. The flooding continues in parts of the Midwest, Missouri. And what will it take? One has to wonder. And yet you saw the clip. I was on Hannity a week ago. And not only are they denying that climate change exists or is a problem, but they're mocking anyone who does. That cannot go on much longer. Don't you think?
No, watching that clip actually made me sick. I don't know quite how to word it, but I was reminded of high school kids or college kids at a fraternity party bullying a girl, and you were doing well, but it was just totally inappropriate when we're talking about an issue that could literally wipe out a big part of the human race if we keep going on the path we're on with. We're predicting food shortages are going to be cropping up in the next few years. We just flooded another huge area of our country. We had the floods in Pakistan, the fires in Russia.
Something nobody's talking about is that ground-level ozone levels are on the rise, and it's causing a loss in crops, $2 billion loss to the soybean crop last year in the U.S., and it's more damaging to plants than it is to humans. And actually, plants are starting to suffer from the effects of ozone from, you know, fossil fuel burning. And nobody's really bringing that into the limelight either.
Well, that's what I'm here to do, is bring it into the green light. And the only thing more nauseating than, you know, Sean Hannity and his sidekick, Chris Horner, who I call the smirk jerk, is when you think about how much money Hannity is making, laughing all the way to the bank. He and Rush Limbaugh and the like, they make millions of dollars, you know, being provocative. And on this topic alone, regardless of what your politics are, I say shame on them.
And one more thing I wanted to mention, right after responsibility of Obama for speaking out more, I would put the mainstream media and the weather people right behind him in terms of lack of action to help the public connect the dots. There's enough information out there for them to be doing more with what's at stake here. Again, the fact that people can watch the TV news, see these terrible floods and fires, and never have any mention of all the science that backs up these predictions as being pretty much what's expected, it just makes my blood boil.
Mine too, and my blood is green and it's boiling, because imagine having been inside mainstream media as a CBS reporter and anchor for two decades, mm-hmm. trying to bring green content and consciousness mm-hmm. into the mainstream arena, both, you know, on airwaves that they're commercial airwaves where there's, you know, huge mm-hmm. audiences, and being told as recently as 3 weeks ago that there's no room for a green talk show on America's airwaves because it would be a hostile environment, because 95% of all talk radio is conservative, ultra-conservative, and they would do to me what Hannity tried to do. And, by the way, I got death threats, hate mail after that, because I dared mention that we, human beings, are part of nature. How radical is that? Okay? Violent death threats, okay? What's wrong with this picture?
So,
the mainstream media doesn't get it, won't connect the dots repeatedly. I've been connecting the dots till I'm blue in the face. That's what Chris Horner was, blue in the face on Hannity.
Oh, yeah.
Green in the face. And guess what? I'm on the internet. I love the Progressive Radio Network, but that's not going to reach the non-choir mass public that we need to reach. And so we stay stuck, and then we wonder why the polls show that climate change is down on the list of concerns.
Yeah, even the polls make me angry, because if they're going to publish the polls, at least at the bottom or the top, they should say 98% of the world's leading climatologists states this is happening, and they never even include that in the polls. And to me, that should be mandatory.
I've been saying 97%. I'm glad to hear it's 98% and not at all surprised. We just have a couple of minutes left, and I am going to have you back, hopefully, when we're on CNN with a green talk show, or and a few times in between. But I have the feeling things seem to be reaching kind of critical mass or critical mess, if you will. Don't you feel like something's about to break? We're about to turn the corner. Mother Nature is, as I said on the show, shouting at us.
Yeah, I think there is a tipping point, too, hopefully, that'll come in public sentiment towards this whole issue, because I think people sense that things aren't right and they're looking for better answers than they're getting, and who knows, perhaps President Obama, you know, we're writing him emails and sending letters, and maybe a few of them leak through to him, and he'll get the idea that, gee, yeah, maybe I could become the world's hero by basically going on the air, prime time, have it repeated on all the TV shows, and tell the people the truth. And then we can have a World War II type effort, as FDR organized, all work together, get the car companies making wind turbines, and we can all make money. There's a lot of opportunity here. We just have to get on the clean, green path towards sustainable energy.
Okay, so you'll sign up for the Green Tea Party, and one of our mottos is the Tea Party stands, they're against big taxes, we're against big gases. They're against
That's
big government,
great.
We're
yes.
against big ignorance. They want less taxes, we want less gases, that's the line. We're steamed that climate change has, you know, become political, and we're also, you know, since we are all in hot water, in the same pot, by the way, in the same boat, before we reach the boiling point, let us steep ourselves in science and infuse ourselves with information and inspiration to come up with a solution. Take a sip and pass it around.
I love it.
Amen.
All right. Well, I think it's time. I do think it's time. So thank you for being my charter members, you and my new friend D.R. Tucker. Thank you for the work you're doing. We will be in touch, and go forth and greenify.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for all the work you're doing, Betsy.
Yeah. Have a good
you're
day.
Most welcome.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back in just a moment with a hero of mine I've yet to actually meet, but know all about his work, and you are going to love him. He is powerful, he is young, he is committed, and he is making a difference. Alec Lors from Kids vs. Global Warming and leading the I Matter March this Sunday, Mother's Day. You won't want to miss him, and hopefully you'll want to get involved. It is your climate, it is your planet, the only one we have, and it is certainly one that our next generation, my daughter, who is Alec's age, you know, don't deserve to inherit, but like it or not, that's what they're getting. Let's see what we can do, we parents, to try to lessen the burden just a touch between now and the time we leave this Earth. Be right back on the Green Front.